Jerusalem, that momentous time in which he faces up to the cross. And Luke is taking us on a journey where Jesus has set his face and is teaching and walking on the way to Jerusalem. We're in chapter 12. Chapter 12, verses 35 through to 48. And Jesus is teaching. And in the midst of that teaching, we find these words. Be dressed ready for service and keep your lamps burning. Like men waiting for their master to return from a wedding banquet, so that when he comes and knocks, they can immediately open the door to him. It will be good for those servants whose master finds them watching when he comes. I tell you the truth. He will dress himself to serve and will have them recline at the table and will come and wait on them. It will be good for those servants whose master finds them ready, even if he comes at the second or third watch of the night. But understand this. If the owner of the house had known at what hour the thief is coming, he would not have let his house be broken into. You must also be ready, because the Son of Man will come at an hour when you do not expect him. Peter asked, Lord, are you telling this parable to us or to everyone? The Lord answered, Who then is the faithful and wise manager whom the master puts in charge of his servants to give them their food allowance at the proper time? Will be good for that servant whom the master finds doing so when he returns. I tell you the truth. He will put him in charge of all his possessions. But suppose the servant says to himself, my master is taking a long time in coming, and then begins to beat the men servants and maid servants to eat and drink and get drunk. The master of that servant will come on a day when he does not expect him, at an hour he is not aware of. He'll cut him to pieces and assign him to a place with the unbelievers. That servant who knows his master's will and does not get ready or does not do what his master wants will be beaten with many blows, but the one who does not know and does these things deserving punishment will be beaten with few blows. Kind of different from what we're used to, isn't it? From everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded, and from the one who has been trusted with much, much more will be asked. This journey has been laid out by Luke. It's sometimes useful to look at who is the author. The author is writing about a subject and to the best of his ability has put this down. And yet it's useful to look and say, who were they? Why did they choose some stuff and put it in there? Why is there an emphasis coming through? It's like history of World War II. To know that you're reading a book, The History of World War II by Winston Churchill, really informs the content that you're reading. And so, reading the narrative, the biography of Jesus, it helps to go, well, who was Luke? What do we know about Luke? Anything. What do we here know about this author called Luke? He was a doctor, yep. He was Greek, that means he wasn't a Jew, yep. He was a companion with Paul, he hung out with Paul at least on some of his journeys, yep. He was possibly the pastor at Philippi. You just made me say all these P's in a row, didn't you? Yeah. Just to see if I could do it, yes. Yes, he was possibly a pastor at Philippi and is linked with Ephesus as well. Well done. Okay. And from those snippets of information, we can actually start to build up a picture as to why he might, in what he's written, emphasize some things. And that his character might bring to life some of what we're looking at. He was a doctor. Doctors in those days didn't have the status that we're used to giving them. If you're in a hospital here, you've got the consultant, the senior registrars, the junior doctors, the medical students. Okay, there's a good going hierarchy. Sort of consultants can leap tall buildings and stop trains. You go all the way down to the bottom where medical students can say the word choo-choo and probably spell it correctly. Okay, there's a good going hierarchy here. Well, that hierarchy didn't exist at the time of Luke. In fact, doctors were probably usually slaves. If they weren't slaves, they had this reputation of being charlatans, people selling snake oil in order to make money. So they were either charlatans, frauds, quacks, or somebody who served the family because they were a slave, dependent on the master, serving those for whom they were working. And not only that, he's now looking and writing the biography of Jesus. And so Jesus, who was Jewish, and yet Luke is a Greek name. He's not Jewish. And in talking with the apostles and those that knew Jesus and the eyewitnesses, he's coming as an outsider. An outsider who may well have been a slave, trying to put these things in order. And in a world where hierarchy matters, Luke is not way up here. He's someone who knows status from the other end. He's someone who probably knew, based where he is not the person who will be first at the table, or second at the table, or third at the table. He would be eating after the meal has been served. And that helps inform. If you look at the book of Luke, there's all these themes that start to come through. Luke is famous for looking at the outsider, the marginalized, the one on the edge, and that Jesus goes, they are mine. They are the ones that I relate to. The Gentile, the woman, those who are sick, those who are unclean. Luke shows time and time again that they are the people that Jesus is for and serving. Why did he pick up on this? Because that was his story. Very likely to have been his story. And one of the themes, one of the words that he puts through his book time and time again is the word amazed. The Gospel of Luke is the Gospel of amazement. This is stunning. This stops people. They just go, wow. They have their mouth open going, what? It's a Gospel of amazement. Oh, just to carry, I've just noticed in my notes one small thing. Again, this is left field, but it's kind of interesting. In that a slave often had a very short name, because it was a short name after the patron for whom owned them. So Luke was probably owned by somebody called Lucius, or one of the longer Roman names, versions of Luke. We see that Paul has a relative, a rich relative, called Lucius. That is a name of extremely high status. That's a name found in the emperor's circles. Is there a link between that Lucius and our Luke? We don't know. But it makes for an interesting thought pattern, doesn't it? Because how on earth did Luke start wandering around, traveling with Paul, traveling in different places where he had to look after himself and he had to have resources? Where were these resources coming from? It was coming from a rich patron, maybe his master, maybe a patron, in which he supplied with all that he needs. He supplied with contacts and money. And if you go there, go and see that person in my name, they will look after you. Luke knew what it was to be in that form of relationship. And here he's showing Jesus traveling to Jerusalem, traveling and teaching. And this is the section that we're looking at is quite well known. It's Jesus' warning about rules made by the religious wallahs, made by those experts who make law, shape the way religion should be, that was such a weight for people to carry. And he's also warning about wealth and the trap of wealth and how that just diverts people away. And in there we have the famous consider the birds and consider the lilies and all the Life of Brian type quotes. But let's read the real one. But Jesus says, therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat, or about your body, what you will wear. Life is more than food, and the body more than clothes. Consider the ravens. They do not sow or reap, and they have no storeroom or barn, yet God feeds them. And how much more valuable you are than birds. How much more. Woe to you by worrying. Who of you by worrying can add a single hour to his life? But since you cannot do this very little thing, why do you worry about the rest? Consider the lilies, how they grow. They don't labor or spin. But I tell you, not even Solomon in all his splendor was dressed like one of those. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into fire, how much more will he clothe you? Oh, you of little faith. And do not set your heart on what you will eat or drink. Do not worry about it, for the pagan world runs after all such things, and your Father knows that you need them. But seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you. So in the middle of this call to be careful about misusing power, be careful of the focus on money, we then get to this passage that we're going to focus on. And I'm not going to look at all of it, because I got waylaid as I was doing the preparation. I just stopped at this very first part of what we're looking at, the parable of the serving master. It's a stunning parable. To use Luke's own word, it's amazing. And it turns the world upside down. If we could have that first slide. It's a carefully worded poem. It's almost like a song that has a little refrain that then grows bigger and then grows bigger. And so the start of the refrain here is this. Be dressed for action and have your lamps lit. What's this all about? Well, in Jesus' day, in Luke's day, people wore a long flowing robe. To do any work with it, you actually had to put a belt on and sort of tuck it up and over. If you wanted to do anything, go for a walk, scrub the floor, serve, carry, help, do anything. You have to be tied up to relax. You would untie it, but it's sort of a bit of a faff getting it all done. So this is where the phrase to girt your loins come from. These flowing robes that needed to be tucked up so that you could work with. So be ready. If you didn't have your belt on, if you didn't have the set, it'd be a real pain to get ready. The other thing is to have your lamp lit, as is, of course, night. And this is the days pre-electricity. If you wore a torch where you could just flick a light. And I don't know if you've ever been in a situation where there is no electricity. And you need light. And there are no matches. Actually, it takes a long time to get something ready, find them. How would you even start to? Use a lighter, use your fire, use the coal and the embers. But it takes a long time just to light a lamp. It's a lot easier to have them already lit, already running. And these things take a bit of work to keep going. So the refrain here is be ready. Be ready like you've not dressed to relax. Be ready like you've got your lamp lit right through the night. I was a junior doctor, so I'd learnt to spell choo-choo, okay? I'd passed the test. And the first day on my medical run where I had the coronary arrest bleep. They'd give me the coronary arrest bleep and explained how it worked. There would be some notes coming through, and then the operator would say, cardiac arrest in such and such a place. And then you would nick off to such and such a place and hopefully save a life. And I was on call over the weekend. Those are the days when on call started at Friday morning and finished at Monday afternoon. So it was the intention that you could sleep. You slept when you could at night. And this is the first night that I'm on call, so it's late on Friday night. It's about 2 or 3 in the morning. And I'd gone to the on-call room, and I thought, what do you do? I'm on call, so I better not get undressed or anything. So I just kicked my shoes off and lay down on the bed. And I fell asleep, and I have the spiritual gift of sleeping, all right? It's a wonderful spirit. Little mentioned, but really useful. And, yes, about 3 in the morning, you hear, cardiac arrest, blah, blah, blah. I thought, what? Cardiac arrest, blah, blah, blah. And I thought, where on earth is this cardiac arrest? Fortunately, I heard my senior doctor come out of his room. I thought, brilliant, but with a slight problem. He was a bit of a cowboy, right? He loved action. He was Mr. Action. And he's going. And I thought, oh, poo, don't even have time to put on my shoes. So I pick up my shoes. I'll follow him. So now he's running down this long corridor section. And I'm trying to follow him, carrying my shoes with my socks on. And he gets to the set of doors and goes bang through them. And it dawns on me as I'm getting closer at full speed that they're swinging back at me. Not only are they swinging back at me, they're actually going to continue back facing me. Both of them are not. Ah! So I've got my socks on. Needless to say, he heard a thump and looked around, and there I was on the floor having been hit by the doors. And he said, it's in the coronary care unit. Come when you're ready. So it did take me a while, and I learnt several lessons there, be ready. Even taking your shoes off might be problematic. So the shape of the song gives us, be ready for action. Next slide, please. Be like these, you can see how we're now getting a bit of a sandwich. Like those expecting their master, and immediately they can open the door to him. So that first set of ideas is now here, and we see it laid as a sandwich. So be ready, be expecting your master, and immediately you can open. And in the middle, what's happened? Well, he has come. The master has come. The one whom we serve, the one that supplies all that we need, he comes and he's knocked. And we see a little bit of the story unfolding. Where's he been? Well, he's been at a wedding feast. Okay? So the next one. Now we see something which is gobsmacking. Luke's listeners would have just gone, sorry? This story is bizarre. Where we see this unfolding sandwich. Blessed are those slaves. And then we go right down to the bottom. Blessed are those slaves. Okay, so we've got the sandwich of ideas. Then in the next layer is the butter on the bread. Is when the master finds alert when he comes. So the slave who is ready. He comes during the middle of the night and he finds them ready. This we've already seen, this readiness. But the meat in the sandwich is not what they were expecting. The master says, and Jesus flags this with a very strong phrase, truly I tell you. This is the one that the King James will translate, amen, amen. Which is, it's very hard to translate. It's a sort of like, listen guys, if you weren't properly listening, stop, listen up. This is it. This is really important. Truly, I tell you, the master will fasten his belt and have them sit down to eat, and he will come and serve them. What? This is nuts. This is odd in the extreme. That the picture, what's going on? The picture here is of the master serving. Luke gives us pictures of Jesus where he talks about God in terms that are absurd. God is absurd in his welcoming. He's absurd in his forgiving, absurd in his generosity. He's absurd in his trust in others. He's absurd in his hospitality. The picture that Jesus paints of God is this almost nutty figure. The parable of the prodigal son. It's badly named, of course. It's not really so much about the prodigal son. It's about the father. We have the father of two sons. And the young son says, I want you dead. And the father, rather than beating him and sending him out, like any good Asian father of that time would, says, okay, take the half that you want. And then the picture of the father, who is almost the sad figure of fun, forlornly searching the horizon, day after day after day, waiting for the possibility of a son to come back that in all rights would never come back, because he's told his father, I wish you were dead, and he's gone. And we know nothing. He knows nothing else about the son except he watches the horizon every day. And the rest of the village think he's nuts. This father that has a heart for his children. And then when the son does come back, he doesn't beat him, doesn't do anything. He throws his robe around him and gives a party. And then you've got the other son who just goes, oh, flag this. I don't want anything to do with this family anymore. I've been pushed to my limit. Do you know how much I've worked? I'm just, that's it. I'm out. And the father goes out and talks to him. This absurdly gracious father who meets his sons and them in their extreme edges of behavior. We also see a God that is extremely generous. We see a master who would trust a scoundrel again. We see he throws a party and he goes out and finds people in the road, etc., etc. Just come in. There's a wedding party. Come in. His generosity. And here we have something that is equally weird, equally absurd. It can come across as a farce. For here the picture is of a master at a wedding feast. And he goes, my people are back home. My servants, my slaves. The family would have had the father figure, the patron, the immediate family. They would have been at the wedding feast. Then there would have been the steward. He probably would have been at the wedding feast, maybe with his family. But then after that, you've got free men, a few of those, and then the slaves. They're right down the bottom. No one cares about them. They're right. And the master at the wedding feast has said, he's taken some food. He's bundled up with food, because the picture here is he returns and feeds them. What is taken food from this wedding feast. And he's pitched up and said, you guys, lie down. It's not a sit down. It's those tables, the Roman tables of lying down, reclining, eating. Wow. That never happens. And yet Jesus is saying, this is the God that we follow. This is the master who is our model. These apocalyptic end times sayings, the king is coming back, be careful, be on your guard, etc., etc., can sound like stick. If you're not doing stuff, you'll get beaten. And Jesus is in the middle of this saying, hang on a minute, look at the nature of the master who's coming back. Look at the very character of the one we model ourselves on. He's a servant. Surely we can be servants too. The master has bought back the party, bought back party food, and is including all those in his household, right down to the slaves, right down to the Luke figures. And there's more than a hint of the Eucharist, of communion here. It's the master himself who brings the bread and the wine. We can turn that off now. So why the call to be ready to serve? The call is for surely we should be like our master. He's a complete nutcase. He's absurdly hospitable. We know if he meets somebody, he'll go, huh, you need a place to stay. Go up to my place, say I sent you. You've come to the wedding, your clothes, your clothes are all dusty and dirty, you need a place to relax. Go up there, they'll look after you, say I sent you. Why should those servants be ready? Because the master will be sending people up to serve. That's what he's like. The late, the dirty, the tired, the journeyers, he'll send them up. We serve Jesus when we give cups of water, when we visit the sick, when we visit those in prison. There's that wonderful Christmas story called Papa Panov. I don't know if you've ever read it. Leo Tolstoy. Tolstoy is an amazing figure if you ever get to read about him. His life was a mess. And he lived law, but he wrote about grace. And the little Christmas story is of a figure being told that Jesus will come to his shop that night, that day. And he looked over Christmas and he looks for Jesus, and the old dustman comes. Now he feeds them and makes them warm. Then somebody else comes, and then somebody else comes, and a mother with a baby comes. And he's disappointed that he never met Jesus. Until Jesus comes back and said, didn't you see me? I was. But the dustman, but the other characters, was that little baby that needed help. Are we ready to serve? Because we have a master who will send people our way. That's what he's like. He will provide the resources. We're supposed to keep our lamps trimmed. One of the reasons you didn't keep your lamps trimmed is because it costs money. You needed the resources. That oil, if you let it go out and relit it, you hadn't used as much. And that mattered to a lot of people. Well, we've got a master who says, you've got all the resources that you need. Don't worry about that. Just keep ready. There'll be times when he runs his household ragged because there's so much need out there. There are people to help, to fix, to feed, to mend, to party with, to celebrate, to serve, to patch up. Christine was listening to the radio this morning. I don't know who else heard it, Radio 4. Wouldn't Steve be proud? Listening to Radio 4. Where in 1947 was described as one of the hardest winters of the century. Of course, it's just as the war is coming to an end, and it's very little resources around the country. And a military chaplain found out that there was a refugee camp on the intense, ramshackle stuff on a river in Scotland, on a river bank in Scotland, and he was told, we can't do anything for them. officially told, don't get involved. You're a military chaplain. Don't get involved. They are European. Some of them obviously German. They're the enemy. They're not. We've got so much need. And this guy just said, that's not right. And he sent out letters. And the response was amazing, apparently, to those who were other, those who were seen as enemy, those who were seen as unclean and not deserving. And despite this being one of the hardest times for so many people, a good response. And out of that form of response, we have Christian Aid, we have Oxfam, we have VSA, other stuff growing and developing because people knew what it was to know the call of God to serve, to provide, to be ready, even in the hardest of times. What does that say for us? We've got this wonderful sandwich of a parable. Be ready. But the meat of that story is because this is who our God is. Our God is a serving, generous, hospitable, resourcing patron. That gives us all we need, but He's also going to send so much our way. Because that's what He's like. That's what He wants us to do. So, be ready. For us here as individuals, our neighbors, those in the church, beyond, and also as a unit, as Kendall Road, with the immigrants, the homeless, being involved in street pastors, refugees and asylum seekers, the Brunswick Refugee meals, food bank, and other stuff. We are being called to remember to tuck up our robes, to always be ready. To recognize when it is that God has sent someone. When it's God Himself, Jesus Himself coming to us. Jesus in the eyes of those that need help. Jesus in the eyes of those that are outcast. Jesus in the eyes of those who are on the edge. Just like Luke. Just like so many people. May that be part of our nature. As we're looking to call a pastor, as we're looking to continue to be involved, may we have the reputation of being, this is a church. This is a group, these are people who are ready to serve because they know the Master. Thank you.